from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
China continues to crack down on religious minorities. Google's CEO gets grilled by the House, and the president signs a bill that helps the persecuted in the Middle East. That's all coming up on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. Even though it's taken years to get through Congress, the president last week signed a bill that promotes accountability for crimes committed by ISIS and provides much-needed relief for those who have been dramatically impacted by the genocide happening in the Middle East. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to talk about the bill he authored is Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey.
Congressman Chris Smith, again, congratulations on the president signing your bill into law.
Oh, thank you, Tony, and it was great being with you at the White House. You know, you, again, play a great and critical role in protecting Christians from this horrific genocide that has claimed the lives of tens of thousands. And these are the survivors, and of course, as you know, we're trying to provide recovery aid, stabilization, humanitarian aid. And under the Obama administration, they wouldn't do it. And now Trump, with this legislation, and also some initiatives on his own, is doing it.
Right. Just to put this in perspective, right now less than 200,000 Christians remain in Iraq. That's down from 1.4 million in 2002. And in 2013, before ISIS swept in, there was 500,000 in the region. I mean, we're just seeing these people driven out, and this is critical that they come back into Iraq in order to provide stability in that region of the world, which is, you and Congressman Frank Wolf have described as the cradle of Christianity.
And it is, as you so aptly pointed out. And they do want to go back, but they want to go back safely. I mean, the Nineveh Plain and other places where they have been there for almost two millennium.
Right.
They want to go back to their ancestral homelands and thrive. But the damage done by ISIS, just about anyone you would meet who is in any of the camps or as part of this recovery effort have lost not just one, but often many members of their family through the genocide of ISIS. So, we are trying to make sure that we have a comprehensive plan to reintegrate these folks back to where they want to go, and that's their homeland. And for those who want to stay in and around Erbil, which is even more protected, to thrive, they need help. And today's bill, now law, will help to do that.
Yeah, and as you said, this provides that the government can partner with those entities that are already on the ground doing the work, these faith-based organizations, which are there doing great work. They have a commitment to that area. The people trust them. So this will just kind of fuel the effort that's already underway. We lose track of time in the city. I said it was 2 years, 3 years. Actually, it may have been longer. How long have you been working on this to get this through Congress?
Well, on the actual bill, it's been over 2 years. I introduced it in September 2 years ago. It took about 6 months to get it out of the House, and then it languished in the United States Senate for a year and a half. We could not get movement on it. And before that, we tried, and I chaired 10 congressional hearings at which Obama administration high officials would come before my panel, and I would push them, appeal to them, pressure them to the best of my ability to help this disadvantaged group of Christians and Yazidis. The estimates are that there were at least 70,000 Christians in the Erbil region of Iraq, and they were not getting any help whatsoever from the U.S. government. I got led down this idea that, well, we're looking into it. And then after 3 years of hearing that false narrative, introduced the legislation, and 2 years later it became law.
And to make this very clear, Congressman Smith, elections have consequences, and having people like you, obviously, in Congress that are passionate about this, and I congratulate you on your victory, your reelection to Congress. But this administration, juxtaposed to the previous administration, is a night and day difference when it comes to religious freedom and the defense of the persecuted.
There's no doubt about that, and I can prove it with the multiple hearings that I actually chaired as chairman of the Human Rights Committee, of the Foreign Affairs Committee. This administration, until Rabbi Saperstein, who did do a good job, but for several years during the Obama administration, they didn't even name countries of particular concern pursuant to the International Religious Freedom Act. So they allowed, you know, countries that were doing egregious things to people of faith to just not get any focus whatsoever. They would not get on this list, which means that they could be sanctioned. This administration, and just today, as you know, Sam Brownback announced the new countries of particular concern.
Right.
And so there's a very robust effort on the part of this administration, the Trump administration, to promote religious freedom. Was not there for 8 years under the previous.
And we're going to take full advantage of this for an administration that cares about this issue. And I know it's a breath of fresh air for you. Congressman Chris Smith, we're out of time. I would love to be able to talk with you about China, because that's a problem region, a problem country as well. But we're out of time. Again, congratulations on
the success. Thank you, Tony. And thank you for your extraordinary work, too, on religious freedom. It's tremendous.
You're welcome.
You can find out more about Representative Chris Smith when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider donating to the work of Family Research Council by simply clicking on the Donate button. Through the generous support of some friends of FRC, your donation will be matched. Your help can make all the difference. That website, once more, is TonyPerkins.com.
This Christmas, give a gift with purpose. Your gift to Family Research Council enables us to advance faith, family, and freedom. Together, we will work to protect life, marriage, and religious liberty in our country. If you give before December 31st to FRC, your gift will be doubled. Be fruitful in your gift giving this season. Call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/2018. FRC wishes you and your family a Merry Christmas and a Blessed New Year.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Earlier this week, the CEO of Google was in the hot seat as members of Congress held a hearing over the allegations that Google employees and trusted partners are censoring the work of conservatives across the brand's various channels. Here's just a small portion of how that committee meeting went.
Multiple Republican congressmen ripped into Google for listing the far-left Southern Poverty Law Center, the SPLC, as a trusted flagger on its platform, YouTube. Now, you talk about the fox watching the hen house. Well, Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana was one of them. Another representative, Louie Gohmert of Texas, went after Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google, for trusting organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center that brands conservatives and Christian groups, hate groups, right alongside organizations like the Ku Klux Klan. Here's what Louie Gohmert had to say in that hearing.
The Southern Poverty Law Center really has stirred up more hate than about any other group I know. They stirred up one guy to the point that he went to the Family Research Council, and I know those people, and they're Christians. And they believe, and I believe, that Christianity is really more based on love than about any other religion in history. God so loved the world he sent his son so loved the world he gave his life, and yet they stirred up hate against the Family Research Center, and a guy goes in shooting.
Joining us now is Tyler O'Neill, assistant editor of PJ Media, who has been covering the Google hearing. Tyler, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Pleasure to be here.
All right, what did we learn today in today's hearing, other than obviously they are hanging out with some far-left groups when it comes to who is gauging what material is appropriate for their platforms?
Well, we didn't actually learn a lot. Sundar Pichai kept denying any evidence that Google has been discriminating against conservative and Christian groups, but are conservative and Christian voices on the platform, or censoring their speech. And this goes against, you know, what our allies have documented, years and years of consistent censorship. But I think the SPLC bit was very telling. You had the CEO of Google admit that he considers the Southern Poverty Law Center a trusted flagger. And what that means is that this group that lists mainstream conservative and Christian groups as hate groups, like you mentioned, along with the KKK, is relied upon to determine what kind of speech should and shouldn't be on YouTube. And they don't allow the SPLC to knock people off of YouTube, but if the SPLC flags something, they'll take it down and then they'll look at it to see if it goes back up. So they're giving them quite a lot of leeway that the SPLC really doesn't deserve.
I mean, this would almost be like in a football game where you've got the referees on the field and one team actually has an assistant to the referee that is helping them make the calls of penalties on the other team. I mean, that's what SPLC is. SPLC is a liberal advocacy group that advocates for policies that most conservatives stand against. But at the same time, they want to be the arbiter of who has access to the platforms to have these debates.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And another point that Gohmert brought up, which was really important, was that the Southern Poverty Law Center paid out $3.37 million to Majid Nawaz, who's, you know, not a Christian. He's a Muslim. He's a moderate Muslim standing against radical Islamic terrorism, but they called him an anti-Islamic extremist, and they had to pay a defamation settlement to him. Well, after that, 60 organizations, and I believe you guys were one of them, have been considering their own separate defamation lawsuits against the SPLC, but they keep pushing. I mean, they have this Change the Terms campaign they launched in October. And the thing that always gets me the most is when they attack the Ruth Institute, which is a small Roman Catholic group, a nonprofit. Right. The Ruth Institute, they said, was a hate group because it cited the Catechism of the Catholic Church on sexuality issues. And I mean, I'm not a Catholic, but I understand the Catholic position on that. And technically, if you're a Roman Catholic, you don't agree with the SPLC's LGBT agenda. But they think that the Catechism, which is the document that Catholics have to follow, is hateful, which means that 1 billion people across the world belong to a religion that the SPLC thinks is hateful. So Google has a lot to answer for in relying on them.
Tyler O'Neill, was there any sense that Pichai was in any way taken aback by the pressing in of members over their relationship with SPLC? Or, as Congressman Gohmert said, are they simply blind to their own liberal bias?
I think Gohmert was right on the money there. What we've seen with a lot of these big tech companies, if you look at where their employees give money, it's very firmly on the Democratic side. And we saw consistent denials over and over again. I think one of the most telling times today was when Jim Jordan pressed Sundar Pichai over the email where it was revealed that Google had this push to increase Latino turnout in the 2016 election in quote-unquote key states where they thought Hillary Clinton would benefit from Latino turnout. And he denied flatly over and over again that this was true. And Jim Jordan, he just continued to press it, and you could see Pichai struggling and squirming as he was confronted with the truth and just unable, utterly unable to deny it.
So Tyler, where does this lead? I know Mike Johnson, Congressman Johnson from Louisiana, opened his comments by saying, look, we're conservatives. We don't want government regulation, but we got to make sure there's fairness out here. It doesn't sound like much was accomplished in terms of getting Google to come to an understanding that they've got to be more even-handed in the way they regulate the searches on Google and allow access to their platform.
Yeah, so there are a lot of different strategies that people are considering. A lot of state AGs have pushed the idea of using antitrust law against these massive tech companies. But I think Jerry Johnson over at National Religious Broadcasters had a better strategy. He has set a deadline for the CEOs of Apple, Facebook, Google, and Twitter that if they don't stop their censorship of conservative and Christian viewpoints by the end of the year, he's going to push Congress to change Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which kind of gives these companies some leeway. They're not held legally liable for the speech on their platforms. But Johnson said that the NRB will be pushing to change that. Ultimately, the biggest thing that we can do is support ways to monitor, I think, these platforms. I've been speaking a lot with Dr. Robert Epstein, and he has this wonderful – he's a PhD psychologist. He's long studied search engine manipulation effect and what these companies can do. And he has a broad-based, really global effort he's building to monitor – to constantly grab the data from what these companies are giving people and make sure that they can't get away with giving different results and trying to skew public opinion.
So it's more of a kind of a watchdog oversight?
Yeah. So the idea is that tech should be watching tech. So it's not a government program, because government's right. always going to be three steps behind these guys. But if you can have a good tech-based system to keep an eye on these tech giants, that's the goal.
At what point, Tyler, do consumers say, you know what, and I'm already kind of seeing this with Twitter, where more and more conservatives seem to be pulling off of Twitter. Is that a possibility, that pressure by consumers?
So... yes, that's always, I mean, effectively, that's the boycott strategy, right? And boycotts can work, but usually they don't, because there is still enough demand for the product that even though a whole bunch of users and consumers don't want to actually keep on with the company, they still need to. You see a lot of conservatives still on Twitter, and... right. Google is essentially everywhere. So,
well, certainly something to be watching. We will continue to do so. Tyler O'Neill, thank you so much for joining us. Very, very insightful. Look forward to having you back on again.
Thanks, Tony.
You can find out more about Tyler O'Neill and PJ Media when you visit TonyPerkins.com. And a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council not only enable us to continue making these programs available, but for a short time, through a few of our generous friends, your donation will be matched. And we hope you'll take the time to donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Don't miss your opportunity to join other like-minded people and become an FRC Stan member. Join today and you'll receive empowering resources like Tony Perkins' book, No Fear, and for a limited time, Pastor Carter Conlon's book, It's Time to Pray. So become an FRC Stan member for $17 a month. That's just 56 cents a day. To join, call 1-800-225-4008 or visit frc.org/stan. Thank you for partnering with us for the sake of America.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Over the last several decades, there has been a lot of scrutiny of China and how they deal with people who don't follow the official state religion. In recent weeks, there has been a significant crackdown on Muslims and Christians in China, with hundreds reportedly being arrested. Joining Tony to talk about this religious persecution is noted author and expert on Asia, Gordon Chang.
Merry Christmas and welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Tony, and Merry Christmas to you and your listeners.
Let's talk about what's happening in China. I also want to get your thoughts on the kind of the trade dispute going on. But first, what's driving this crackdown, renewed crackdown? I mean, they've been hostile, but it seems like a new level of hostility, if I'm not misreading it.
Well, first of all, there's the essential nature of the Communist Party, but that's also been intensified by Xi Jinping, the current ruler. There has been, across China, an attack on all religions. If you go back maybe a couple months ago, people were talking about the detention of more than a million Uyghurs who are Muslims in the northwestern part of the country, and just they were thinking this was against Islam. But no, you know, we have seen, as you just pointed out, an intensified attack on Christianity as well. And I think that we are going to see the same measures that have been applied against the Uyghurs applied against all religions. They will go as far as they can until world public opinion stops them. And that's why it's so important to talk about these issues.
Now, I had Ambassador Brown back on recently and Congressman Chris Smith, who I was with actually up on the Hill just a few minutes ago. The Uyghurs, explain to our listeners what's happening with the Uyghur Muslims, where they're in concentration camps, apparently, reportedly, a million that are being held in these re-education camps.
Some actually say more than a million, but clearly that's a substantial portion of the population of what the Chinese call their Xinjiang Autonomous Region, and what the Uyghurs are now starting to call the East Turkestan Republic. But they are held in what the Chinese call vocational training facilities, but which resemble concentration camps. And these are the important thing here is that Uyghurs are actually dying in these camps in not small numbers. Now, there's no attempt to mass exterminate them, so this is different from the Third Reich. But what we are seeing, though, are many of the same types of techniques used against the Uyghurs that the Germans used against the Jews. This is now starting to spread, Tony, because the Chinese authorities are beginning to apply these same tactics against Muslims in the middle part of the country. And, you know, as we've seen, there's been this attack against Christians. September was the month that the Vatican came to an agreement with Beijing on the appointment of bishops, and that was the month, you just said, that the Zion Church was closed. So clearly there is no freedom for Christians in China.
Gordon Chang, they're now moving toward what they call their social credit score system, in which this all the various engagement, whether what they would look at online, what they read, they're building this social credit score, which will have an impact upon where they can live, what jobs they can have. Explain to our listeners what the government there is doing with this social credit score.
Yeah, the social credit score will take into account all facets of a person's life and reduce them to a number. So, for instance, if someone jaywalks, that's going to be a deduction of points. If someone goes to a Xi Jinping movie, that's probably going to increase the score. But clearly being a Christian or a Uyghur or someone of faith, any faith is going to result in a reduction of score. There are now social credit systems that are being implemented among municipalities. But by the end of 2020, maybe 2021, as they're now talking about, this will be a national score. It'll be a national system. And people with low scores will not be able to get jobs. They won't be able to get to fly. Indeed, right now, social credit scores are being used to take dissident journalists and making sure that their kids can't go to school, that they can't fly on airplanes. So this is an attempt of totalitarian control. We often talk about China as authoritarian. Yes, it was authoritarian maybe 10 years ago, but under Xi Jinping, it's moving fast to totalitarianism, what it was in the first years of the People's Republic under Mao Zedong.
So, Gordon, what are we to make of this? How should the United States be posturing here? We're in this kind of trade dispute. It's affecting our stock market here in the country. Who's going to blink first? And what is the connection to this in terms of, could this be a leverage point where religious freedom and greater tolerance for human rights should be demanded of China by the United States?
Yeah. China is challenging the U.S. across the board, whether it's a question of trade, whether theft of U.S. intellectual property, or what we're seeing right now is an attack on Christians. And some Americans, by the way, have been detained in China for helping Christian communities. And so we've got to respond to all of them. And we've got to remember that the Chinese regime, even though those guys wear suits and ties, they are thugs. They are outside the community of civilized society. And we've got to treat them as such. I think we basically got to shun them, because what they are doing, not only to people of faith, but to all Chinese, and indeed, we've got to remember that Xi Jinping is dropping hints that that China is the world's only legitimate state. So at least in his mind, he thinks of us as subjects to China. And we can know what will happen to Christianity if he were ever able to implement his ambitions.
Is President Trump posturing in the and from your perspective, is his posture the most in such a way that it's most likely to bring out a positive outcome with China?
Well, I think President Trump on trade, for instance, is doing absolutely the right thing. His tariffs under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974 are meant to be a remedy for China's theft of U.S. intellectual property. And clearly, this is something which is existential to the American economy. Also, President Trump has opposed China on a number of other things that it's doing. So I think that he is starting to understand the essential nature of China's attack on American society. There's a lot more that the president needs to do. There's a lot more that all of us need to do. But at least we're moving in the right direction. And I think most Americans, and you can see this across the political spectrum in this country, are starting to understand that we've got to have a much more resolute posture with regard to China, because China is emboldened and it's doing things which are destructive of good order and international peace. And certainly they're challenging and undermining our democracy.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.